Hello, and welcome to episode 73 of Expertise is Overrated, the podcast that takes the time to answer the questions you didn't know you didn't want the answers to. I'm Sean.
And I'm Vib, and neither of us has any clue what we're talking about.
Like, it would appear, literally everyone on Reddit right now.
What do you mean right now?
All the time. It's always. It's Reddit. It's always terrible. Has it got worse? I think it has got worse in the last 6 weeks or so. That's probably too long. But like the last couple of weeks, I think it goes through cycles.
You mean Reddit generally?
Or the bits of Reddit that I'm in, I guess.
Mm.
But someone was saying this in a Discord server that I'm in recently. And this isn't what we're talking about, but it might be relevant. Do you feel like everyone has been in a bad mood for the last few weeks? Just like literally everyone in the world seems to be in a bad mood.
There's a little bit of that.
I mean, there is, isn't
I can
there?
Kind of speak just... for myself. I feel like I know what you mean from me personally, even though I'm not in a bad mood, but I sort of am.
It's and bad mood is probably overstating it. Just like I'm really irritable.
Yeah. But I think I think the reasoning for that is just that we're coming towards the end of winter and it's still a bit miserable and, you know, everyone's just fed up.
That's true. It's late March and it's still cold and wet and raining. And I'm like, hold on. No. I want better weather, please.
Yes. It's time for some sun and to make the flood warnings go away and stuff like that. But I sort of know what you mean. Online, on Discord servers and in Reddit, I do think you're right, although maybe it's just some sort of confirmation bias now.
I don't know. Everyone feels snippy. Spoiling for a fight. I know I'm always spoiling for a fight, but...
Well, it's an American election year, so maybe that's...
That's true. And it's a British election year, hopefully.
Is it?
I mean, it should be.
Do we know that?
We should have an election in October. Fixed time.
You talking about the polls, so I'm half expecting the Tories to just go, yeah, no elections for you anymore.
No, I'm fairly sure under the Fixed Term Parliament Act, we've got an election in October.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well.
He says.
Let's hope so.
He said, I keep hoping that we'll have an election. I think we wear our politics fairly heavily on our sleeves in this podcast, but please, I cannot have another 5 years of Tory government.
Well, I mean...
can't cope.
It's actually not a bad segue to, I think, what we're talking about today, but I feel like a lot of the polls that we're seeing, and I feel like, I tried to expose myself to a varied breadth of those, but it does seem that they're all suggesting a Tory exit. Some ludicrously so, others more realistically.
I did see a poll that suggested that Labour was going to win 500 seats.
Yeah, that was funny.
which would be very funny. It would also be, I fundamentally believe this, terrible for the country if Labour had a majority of that size.
I'll reserve this for another podcast, but I was watching a random video yesterday evening, from Useful Charts. I don't know if you've ever come across them.
No, I haven't.
But it was they essentially just they make charts, lot of sort of family trees and things like that. And
one awesome thing to watch.
Yeah, it was. I don't know why YouTube recommended it to me. I think I've seen one like many years ago, and all of a sudden it popped up. I was like, oh, that's interesting. It was on essentially like the history of Europe, Western Europe, I guess, and sort of starting from really early on. And what sort of struck me from all of that is like periods of great wealth and prosperity and advancement of culture in Europe anyway seem to be directly correlated to periods where you had stable government,
yeah,
or really long-lived kings or queens. Like Elizabeth I, for
stability.
Example.
Stability is absolutely the answer.
It does make you wonder, why on earth is our democratic system built on something that changes every 4 years? It's kind of baffling, isn't it, really?
Because the target of a democratic system isn't just stable economic growth.
I think there's maybe an argument that the cycle's too short. But I feel like I'm also dangerously coming dangerously close to just saying, you know what, bring back dictatorships or monarchies.
I mean, I think you and I are very pro technocracy as an idea, an enlightened technocracy.
Yeah, but it's just so hard to pull off, isn't it? If you can figure out the oversight and the mechanisms with which to try and replace that.
That's your problem. Eventually you end up handing power to a group of 5 people and saying, please be nice. Basically.
Please be nice and selfless.
Please be selfless, exactly.
Yeah, so that's interesting, just food for thought. And then another one that I watched from them was quite topical, I think, and again, perhaps could segue to what we're talking about.
Yeah, sorry, we do need to.
Yes, I'm rushing you through here, because we did say we're going to try to make this a shorter episode, but we'll see
how we are also going to try and do that. We'll see how that goes.
But it was effectively the history of the city of Jerusalem, right? Obviously, a very inflammatory topic. Well, not Jerusalem per se, I suppose, but Israel. And I think just purely from an academic point of view, I don't think they were trying to sort of peddle any agendas. But it was just sort of like, let's look back to the sort of earliest recorded history of what was going on in Jerusalem and see who controlled the city, what religions were practiced, and so on and so forth. Funny enough, I think the Romans actually controlled it sort of the longest.
Almost certainly.
Yeah, in terms of religion, I mean, it's actually been a fairly sort of, any kind of worship goes state for a lot of its history. But I think sort of Islam won out by, I think, maybe 100 years of Judaism. But it sort of started off with the Judaists. It was really interesting. I recommend it.
Well, yeah, there's lots of periods of history under both Crusader and Saracen rule where it was like, should we just not fuck around with Jerusalem? Like, everyone can come here. It's important to everyone.
I think so. Well, also just pragmatically, it's like, yeah, you can take the city, but you realize that the population is so mixed of people with various beliefs that, you know, unless you're going to try and really change that, but, you know, that's just not worth the effort, really.
Anyway, so, yeah. None of that. Well, it's all sort of tangentially what we're talking about today.
But, yes, different science, different stories, different ways of viewing things.
That is a good way of putting it, different ways of looking at things. And that is, I suppose, a little bit the inspiration behind this episode and what hopefully might become another mini-series, I guess. Is that fair?
Well, hopefully. Well, maybe not a mini-series, actually. I feel like this could be a staple of what we do, albeit relatively infrequently.
I think it needs to be infrequent because otherwise I'm going to get too angry too often. I'm a man who gets quite angry anyway.
But we did promise that you were going to launch sort of a civilizing the internet campaign.
Yeah, I don't know that this is episode one of civilizing the internet. I think this is more seeing if it's
episode 73, I think.
It's episode 73 of civilizing the internet. I think it's more just seeing if it's the sort of content that actually works for us. I do worry slightly that we're going to discover that we're just another echo chamber. But I don't think so, because I think you and I disagree quite frequently.
We do, but on
quite a macro,
but on not very many topics, I think, maybe. Is that the right way of saying it? I don't know.
I think there are some very, very high-level principles that you and I don't agree on. Like so high-level that they're almost not relevant.
The thing to remember as well is that we are quite good at arguing. So sometimes our sort of, or at least my actual belief may not be what I'm arguing for.
Well, for slightly different reasons, we've both been through quite the crucible of developing our argument style.
Yes.
You by virtue of still teaching, and me by virtue of that's my job. And I don't want this to turn into just two people who agree with each other shouting on the internet, because there's plenty of that around. So if that's what this ends up being every single episode, then I don't think we should do it.
Well, no, because part of it is, right, that we're trying to essentially say there are multiple views on virtually every topic.
There are multiple views.
It's whether or not those views are actually worth anything. or they're literally just so, what's the word? Dreadful, I guess. It's so unfounded in any kind of human framework that you know, we shouldn't really humor them.
Balance for balance's sake is not valid. I think there was lots that you saw during the, for example, during the Brexit referendum. The BBC, this is yet another wild segue. We're never keeping this episode short.
No.
The BBC would frequently have interviews with economists, right? So they'd find a pro-EU or an anti-Brexit economist and a pro-Brexit economist. But what you didn't know was going on in the background was the anti-Brexit economist represented 98% of the academic consensus on the effect of Brexit. And so they'd gone absolutely digging to the fringes of wild, unvalidated economic theory to find their pro-Brexit economist. You just got presented with two people who were held up as broadly equivalent.
Yeah,
which poisons the debate.
It's really challenging, that sort of thing, right? Because it's important to have two sides, but yeah, equally, as you say, a better way of doing this is to sort of put nine or ten people in a room, nine of which are all anti-Brexit, one of which was pro-Brexit, and then sort of that gives you a more accurate representation of the field is thinking, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, but I think, I don't really know what I think. You've derailed me already.
Yeah, let's pull this back. So I don't quite know what episode we're going to end up with. I mean, the clickbaity title would be Explaining Gamergate 2.0 for the unwashed masses. But I don't know if that's going to
be. Well, it's a nice foray for us, because, I mean, it's you know, gaming is something we talk about.
That's why I thought it was a good place to start.
It also feels like this is actually quite an easy one. In some ways. You know, I think potentially throughout the series, what we're actually doing is building up to our great, is there such a thing as absolute ethics?
Is there such a thing as absolute ethics?
Or absolute morality? That I think is a hill that we will both die
morality.
On.
The virtue of objective morality. No, I think that's fair. But so, are you out of the loop on Gamergate 2.0?
You know what, when you suggested it, I think I was out of the loop on Gamergate 1.0.
I had to go and look up 1.0, but I'm more in the loop on 2.0, I think.
It's I didn't know that this had a name, to be honest. I sort of vaguely remember the things that happened. But I confess, and this probably is quite bad of me, that I didn't really realize it was going on right now. Which I guess we are calling Gamergate 2.0, yeah.
It has taken on the name Gamergate 2.0. I think it's potentially being used as a touchstone for a broader debate that is happening in gaming, which might actually be a more interesting place to spend some time than just talking about the screaming masses on Reddit. The brilliant thing about 2.0 is there appears to even be two arguments about what the argument is. The two sides don't even seem to agree what they're... Well, there might even be three.
So in a nutshell, what is going on?
So one side of the argument is saying that there is a company... Okay, so this is an objectively true fact. There is a company called Sweet Baby Incorporated, working out of Montreal, who are engaged by video game companies to provide, and I'm going to quote from their website, so I can't be accused of anything other than quoting, they are a narrative development and consultation studio whose mission is to tell better, more empathetic stories while diversifying and enriching the video games industry. We aim to make games more engaging, more fun, more meaningful, and more inclusive for everyone. Right.
Let me guess. That last word is the thing that everyone's complaining about.
Well, it appears to be. So someone at some point...
Ironic, really, isn't it?
Someone on Steam appears to have pulled together a curator group of games on which Sweet Baby Inc. worked on, mm-hmm. which is just a list lifted from their own website. They did no research at all. They just went, oh, these are projects that they have announced that they've worked on. And you've got all sorts in here. Suicide Squad is in there.
That one did Lance called, or what I think, did it?
No, it didn't. A game called The Crew Motorfest. I think there's a few games on here that are meant to have not landed very well.
The Crew, you know. Played Crew 2. That's a decent game. Yeah. Just future racing.
They work with EA, they work with Square, they work with Warner Brothers, Valve, 2K, lots and lots of organizations. And there is an argument being made that... No, sorry. Let's not move on to the argument. So that list appeared on Steam. Someone who worked at Sweet Baby Inc. tried to get the list taken down for apparently no reason.
Right.
Is
that not in the public domain, that kind of knowledge?
Well, this is I think why it was they tried to get the list taken down. I think their argument no, that's speculation. I'll do the speculation later. I'm going through the things that appear to be objectively verifiable facts. There are some problematic tweets by another Sweet Baby Inc. employee. And then it has snowballed and snowballed and snowballed, and now people are writing articles about Sweet Baby Inc.
Mm-hmm.
and their interactions with gaming companies. There was a claim made by a Kotaku journalist that the members of the Steam group were engaging in harassment against... Sweet Baby Inc. employees, but I don't know that that's been verified,
mm-hmm.
essentially. So that's all stuff that I think is provable fact.
Somebody uploads a link or a list to Steam of games that Sweet Baby Inc. have been working on.
Yeah, Sweet Baby Inc.
That's it.
Was
there any rhetoric in that list or just here's a list?
Not that I don't know. I haven't seen that.
A weird way to sort of a weird thing to get animated about. Anyway,
I think
unless it was like unless there was information there that was not yet public knowledge, which that is a legal concern, I suppose.
I think it was all stuff that was, I think it was all stuff that was public knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Just this is the list of games on their website. That they've worked on. I think the implication being, so don't play them because Sweet Baby Inc. are bad and all of that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's a bad connotation. Yeah, sure.
I think that's a stretch that I'm making. Based on everything that came after it, I feel fairly confident in making that stretch. But,
well, it makes sense, right? Because why else would someone go through the trouble of just making a list, right? For no
exactly.
agenda. It's just not what people do.
Exactly. So that is... that appears to be the factual basis for how we got to the position that we're in. But the position that we appear to be in now is people are engaging in a debate as to whether or not what Sweet Baby Inc. is trying to do, i.e., tell better, more empathetic stories while diversifying and enriching the video games industry is a laudable aim, which I think is probably where we come in, I guess.
Yeah.
Because we can't really deal with the facts. Well, there's no debate to be had over the facts. Those are the facts.
Yeah, so I mean, if you listen to that mission statement, right? So I guess... What we like to think is, right, that you can entertain most arguments, virtually all arguments, right, at least to an extent. You can try to understand where people are coming from. But a mission statement I really already struggle to say why anybody would object to it.
So I guess the argument would be, and it's not an argument that I think holds much water, but I think the argument would be that the mission statement is disingenuous.
Okay.
Because a mission statement is nothing more than a PR statement at the end of the day.
Yeah, sure.
But I think the argument would be, and perhaps some stuff that we can come on to later would be held up as evidence of that, you're not actually just trying to tell better, more empathetic stories while diversifying and enriching the video games industry. You are pushing an agenda, I think would be the argument. Which just comes back to what you said 5-10 minutes ago, this idea that games should be for everyone. So I have seen a lot of stuff, and I'm sure you have seen a lot of stuff relatively recently about changes made to MJ in Spider-Man 2, Aloy in Horizon Zero Dawn.
I thought the whole problem with MJ was that they made no changes to MJ, even though everyone's saying they did.
I mean, that's...
Wasn't that the thing? I swear I've seen that somewhere, where the developers were like, I don't know what people are talking about, we didn't change it. But
it's the same, it's just that a PS5 is more HD.
Exactly, yeah.
I'm sure that's actually what's going on. But, okay, perhaps not changes, but... Or there's changes from the comics, perhaps, is a better way of putting
sure,
it.
Sure.
But then, you know, you've got the whole debate about...
God, this feels like Rings of Power all over again, really, doesn't it?
It does a little fit.
We had this debate back then, I think.
I think that's exactly... That's exactly right. We had a very similar... Well, you and I didn't have the debate. There was a very similar debate had. And I'm trying to find the name of the video game. There is a new video game made in Japan in which the main character is, like, just a sexy ass, as far as I can tell. I forget its name, though. It's really bothering me that I can't remember its name.
Wait, as in an actual pair of...
The character is actually a woman, but all of the screenshots are just of this woman from the butt up. Basically,
old school Japanese games.
Well, exactly, and then there's lots of like, this at least they still make good games in Japan. Sweet Baby Inc. haven't got their claws in there,
right? Okay, so let's just say so people are anti-woke. That's what Gamergate 2.0 is all about then.
And I think I feel confident in drawing that conclusion.
Right. We don't want to play as Miles Morales as Spider-Man. We want to play as Peter Parker because, you know...
Black people in my Spider-Man.
Exactly. And
Unger Bodder in Ragnarok had a similar...
Dreadful. Yeah.
Similar backlash. How dare they make her black?
Even Thor, right? Oh, he's not athletic enough.
Fat Thor. How people didn't understand that Fat Thor was the best thing in Ragnarok, I will not understand.
Last of Us Part 2, right? The fact
Last of Us Part 2.
That Ellie was gay or bi, I can't remember. I haven't played those games for some reason.
I think she is only ever gay on screen, if that makes sense. So I don't think her sexuality is explored because it's not a story about her sexuality, but she is.
But in any case, makes her the devil either way, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And somehow that impacts your gameplay experience.
having Abby kill Joel in The Last of Us 2 means that the game is about hating white men. All of these unbelievable reaches that people make. Aloy's face is my favorite one of all of these. She has the absolute temerity. So this is from the Horizon series. She has the absolute temerity to look like a real person,
as opposed to
like a Japanese. I'm going to blame Japanese video games. It's not
as opposed to like having a real anime look about her and stuff. You mean,
or like you know, she has like not wrinkles because she's too young for wrinkles, but she has like acne scars, and her skin isn't like pristine pale white. It's got like blotches and blemishes and all of that because she looks like a real person rather than an idealized version of a person.
Mm.
And the fact that that's somehow bad.
I mean, the crime in that game is that she's got no personality.
that's the thing. There are real criticisms to be made of the Horizon games. Aloy is a terrible character. I think she's a really, really bad character, and she ruins those games for me.
I could never get into the first one because I just felt no sort of empathy.
But this is the problem. So, and I think this is actually the problem. these arguments end up stifling meaningful discussion about those games, because I can't really hold my hand up and say I don't like Horizon, because it's always is it because of Alloy? Well, yes, it is, but it's not because of the way Alloy looks. I just don't like her. Like, I fundamentally don't like the character. I could play with my eyes shut and not like her.
And it's not liking her for the right reasons.
No, I don't.
Maybe this is why we need to finish the story, and actually, this makes sense, right? But you know, that's a risky game design strategy, I would say. But there's plenty of characters that you're like, oh, I really dislike that person, but it's for a reason. So
yes, and there is a difference there. Sorry, yes, there is a difference there, and that difference should be drawn out. But there's a difference between this character is behaving in an understandable and compelling way that I find reprehensible. I'm going to struggle to think of an example, but there are people in media who are so unbelievably awful and evil, but we still love them. Heath Ledger's Joker is a fantastic example of this. I need to jump to a different medium, but Heath Ledger's Joker is awful. He's a horrible, horrible human being, but he's also a fundamentally compelling character because he's interesting. And Alloy isn't interesting. She's just dull and bland.
She's maybe not a bad example, actually, right? Because I guess what a lot of people are coming from is, I want to play a video game where I feel represented, or, you know, where I can relate to the character. It's just weird where people sort of draw the boundaries, right? As in, I think we're all perfectly happy to play a Peter Parker Spider-Man. But already when it's, you know, Aloy from Horizon, some people are like, ooh, no, she looks a bit too bland for me. But we're getting into, you know, we're already getting deep into bigotry almost, right?
No, we are. I don't think there's any... Well, there is an argument to be had there. I don't think it's... I don't think the counter argument is particularly meaningful. This is bigotry. This is a form of bigotry.
Yes.
It's not as poisonous in the way that we're having the conversation yet as some forms of bigotry that exist, but it leads to those more poisonous forms. But I think.
But sort of what I was trying to maybe get at there is like the issue is that we're two straight white males speaking to each other.
Yeah, but I think that almost makes, in this very specific case, it actually makes us more qualified.
Yes, on that. But what I was going to ask as a thought experiment was, you know, if there is a gay black woman playing Spider-Man 1, would she feel, oh, why is this guy white? Or is it just, it's Peter Parker from the comic books. Let's not make any more fuss of it. Same way that Miles Morales is also from comic books. So let's, or is he?
Which is hugely important. Anyway, he's a comic book character, which is a hugely important point in the Miles Morales and Spider-Man 2 conversation that gets missed. Miles Morales is not an invention. He is a, like, canon Spider-Man. But, sorry again. I'm sick as a parrot.
Get your bloody sinuses excised.
Oh, it's horrible. We're recording, like, we skipped a recording. I'm recording this one about 5 days late because of how ill I've been, and I'm still not well. And I'm struggling to string my thought together. What is my thought? My thought is, I don't think representation works that way. I'm happy to be told that I'm wrong. But I don't think the point of representation is that a gay black woman, to take your straw man, plays Spider-Man 1 and thinks, why isn't this character like me?
Yeah.
The point of representation is that in Fallen Order, right, there is a black woman, Seer, is just, and it's not part of her character that she's a black woman, she just is.
Yes, that's not, nor should it be, exactly.
That's what representation is, and that's what Sweet Baby Ink and companies like Sweet Baby Ink do. they go into your game and they say, or your whatever your piece of media is, and say, you've chosen to make this person, like, your art decision for this person was to make them
vanilla man black. A who is white.
Exactly.
Just duplicated 20 times. Like, let's not do that, because that's not what the world looks like.
All of and there's some really interesting stuff that happens here around AI generation, right? And I think I'm fairly sure this is something that they work with as well. So you can use, and it is, I think, ethically fair for artists to use AI to generate NPC skin variants, basically. But a sensitivity consultant like Sweet Baby Ink comes in and goes, are you aware that the model that you're training your AI on is only going to generate white men?
Yes.
And most of the time, the developers are going to go, whoa, shit, no, I didn't realize that. And they're like, yeah, no, pump a little bit more data into your model and you'll get a more widespread set of NPCs. Yeah. That's what sensitivity consultants are. But the other side of what they do, sorry, go ahead.
No, you finish your thought.
The other side of what they do, and I know more about this in the writing space than in the video game space, is they, if you are trying to tell a certain kind of story or have a certain kind of character, they have people who can tell you how to write that in a sensitive manner. And the obvious example of someone who uses this is Brandon Sanderson. He has his Stormlight Archive series. All of the main characters in that have some form of neurodiversity or mental illness, because that's core to the story that he's writing. He's writing a story about, essentially, how you can be a person who doesn't let that define you and bring you down, which is a fantastic story. But as someone who is not, I'm trying to think, suffering from absolute manic depression or asexual or pansexual or all of these things, and I appreciate that asexuality and pansexuality are neither a mental illness nor neurodiversity. I'm just pulling characters at random out of my head from the books. He engages people who are to tell him how to more accurately write that lived experience.
Yeah.
How can anyone have a problem with that?
I know.
This is why I don't understand. Fundamentally, I don't understand what the problem is with asking someone how to tell a story better.
Yeah, it makes for a richer world. And you're right, it makes a lot of sense to hire professional people to sort of help you make that as accurate, or maybe it's not the right word, but as fulfilling as you can. But what bothers me, which is what I was going to say, is I think Fallen Order is not a bad example, right? And the character of Seer. Is that her name? Yeah.
I think it's Seer.
Yeah. It's been so long since I played it. But it's obviously set in the Star Wars universe, right? Which is full of aliens. And I bet you could have replaced her character with any number of alien species and nobody would have made even a slight comment. But because they didn't do that and they went specifically... Well, I don't know if this was a design choice or whatever. But let's for argument's sake, they specifically wanted this to be a black woman. And all of a sudden, then you get, you know, the keyboard warriors.
Star Wars?
Yeah. Fuck no. Which is so baffling to me. And I feel like I am right in saying that is exactly what would happen, right? If you replaced it with an alien character, I think people wouldn't complain.
If
Seer
were instead of Twi'lek.
Yeah.
Nobody would give a shit.
Yeah.
I'll go to the battlements on that.
Me too.
I'll go to the barricades on that.
And this is what I can never understand, is like in a world like Star Wars and so many other universes, this is why I play video games with me, right? We're trying to escape from reality. So fundamentally, it's full and wonderful and diverse, much like our actual world as well. So why do we like some diversity and not others? It's really weird.
Sorry. You've hit a little bit, and obviously not deliberately, the argument that gets levied against you there. I play video games for escapism. I don't want to... video games are escapist fantasy. I don't want real-world politics in my escapist fantasy video games.
But there is no politics there. It's just a person.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's
and
just
I think
a person.
That you've absolutely hit the nail on the head there. That's exactly the point that's... I think often deliberately missed. People aren't political. The existence of a person is not political. the fact that there is a... Well, the fact that Ellie in The Last of Us 2 is gay is not a political statement.
No.
It might... To be fair, it might be.
It's a storytelling thing, right? They're clearly trying to it's a bad thing that we took that as an example because I think either one of us played that game. But it's the same way of, if you read a book, you may not like the story. It's a bit like with Horizon, right? We didn't really like the story. It wasn't that engaging. If they want to tell a story where Ellie's sexuality or whatever is fundamentally a big part of it, and I don't know if it is, fair enough. You know, that might just not be your big story, but it doesn't take away from the fact that it is a great game by all accounts. It's great mechanically. Mm. It tells a really interesting, deep story.
Yeah.
But you don't have to like it, but equally don't go to war over the fact that they've ruined it because they made a character gay. Like, that makes no sense.
No, it doesn't. And it is something that fundamentally baffles me. And if you were someone who is A, capable of stringing together coherent thoughts, and B, has a strong opinion about this that you are capable of expressing without using words that you cannot define, like woke, please let me know what I'm missing. And I appreciate I've deliberately made that a relatively difficult ask. But
no, but I agree with you. In the spirit of sort of there's multiple sides to every story, there's multiple views on every issue.
I think, go ahead.
Yeah. Come to us and tell us what we're not seeing here. Why are we bigoted against the people who do have a problem against what Sweet Baby Ink does as a job, for example? I mean, I'd love to hear it. As Sean says, though, in a well-constructed, thought-out, non-inflammatory way.
And don't call me bigoted, because I'll just agree with you. Have you seen this? This is my favourite one at the moment. Apparently being in favour of, or essentially being against the people who piss and moan about this makes you bigoted against those people.
That's why I used the word earlier as well, because it's I can see why they think it's true.
And I disagree with you. If that's a form of bigotry, then it's a form of bigotry that I consider acceptable, because I don't think that those are views that are worth protecting.
Yeah, no, quite. Or at least the way that I'm interpreting those views, and I'm going to back myself here to think that at least in 95% of cases, I'm pretty right.
But
those views are not worth protecting. Yeah,
if we do turn this into a full-blown, albeit intermittent series, that's an open invitation. Get in touch with us. We'll say it every episode. Get in touch with us. Give us your views. We do want to hear them, and we will engage with you either in Discord or over email or on Reddit or wherever. We will engage with you in good faith, and we will try and get to the bottom of our disagreement. And if you pay us £100 on Patreon a month, you can come on the show and explain it to us on the show. That's just a true statement.
Well played. Well, that is a true statement.
You can well go and played. Check out our Patreon. It's there.
No, I mean,
I'm going to regret that.
If worst comes to worst, to get £100, it's not that bad, really. It pays for another year of Podbean.
It's very true.
No, I think you're right. The way I guess we're seeing this is sort of we look at current issues or cases of misinformation or debates and sort of see what the truth is behind it all, maybe? Is that what we're doing? Or sort of assessing either side and seeing if there is any bigotry? Are we trying to sort of be
I'm happy to be the bigot police, but I don't think that content is going to be as interesting as doing what we've done, which is take a step back, try and ascertain the facts. These are the things that cannot be in dispute. This is just what happened, and placing no moral judgment on the facts, because facts are not subject to moral judgment. They simply are. Once we've done
depends
that,
depends on your facts, doesn't it?
Well, no, but that's the point. No, it doesn't, and that's the reason we're having this, because you sent me the world's most annoying fucking comment.
It was so good, wasn't it?
Which fact? Which set of facts would you like? You should post that in Discord, actually.
Yeah,
put
which
that
facts
in,
would
our,
you like?
In our Discord. Which facts would you like?
History
it's
of
so
Ireland
good.
And Britain. Yeah, I enjoyed that. As well.
It was really funny. Unrelated, because you said the history of Ireland. Someone sent me a video today of Nigel Farage drinking a toast and saying "up the rah," and I got so angry I nearly punched something.
What an absolute idiot!
To be fair, he did. It was a video that Irish media showed in an interview with Nigel Farage, being like, "What the fuck is wrong with you?" It was so good.
That's
I'll find
good.
It. I'll,
yeah, that's pretty. Good.
I'll find it. And I'll send that. It to you.
I will post that comic in our Discord. Make sure you come there to check it out.
Yeah, the links in the description. I think that's where we're going to be most useful, though. I think if we can take situations like this, and if you have a situation developing like this that you want our take on for some reason, again, get in touch. We'll have a look at it.
Yeah.
Boil down the facts, including these facts are actually in dispute. There are, like, people can't agree on what happened next. That's fine. And then once we've got those facts, take a step back and try and work out why are we arguing? What's actually at stake here? Why are people debating this? What's the disagreement?
Yeah.
And if we can, which side is right?
Yeah. Which ultimately is just what we do for a living, really, isn't it? So
well,
somehow
exactly.
We've turned our hobby into more of what we do at work.
Exactly, that is what we do at work.
It literally is. You know, really... people sometimes think that science is literally just you come up with a fact and that's good to go, but all we do is argue about those facts and how factual the facts actually are.
To be honest, I think law is mischaracterized as an art. It's a science. It's not a very exact science.
You're also
portraying
facts in court, right? I mean, to take a sort of obvious example, but no one's sort of... The whole point is not that it's interpretation, or subjective as such, right? It's facts, surely.
Yeah, what you're seeking is when you end up in court. What you're seeking is impasse breaking, essentially taking two interpretations of a set of facts and going to a judge or a jury and saying we need you to break this impasse because one side believes X and the other side believes Y. And here are all the facts for you to make that determination.
Yeah.
It's a science.
Yeah.
It's just not, as I say, it's not a particularly exact science. It's like physics.
There's a hot take and a half. Holy shit. Wow. I can't believe you've just said that.
I haven't
Holy
done
shit.
Physics since GCSE.
Okay. Well, that's possible. But yeah, I mean, right. I think we have kept it rather short. I feel there's not a whole lot more we need to say on this, really, other than... Watch this space for more of this sort of stuff.
We didn't discuss Gamergate 1.0, but...
Well, it's more of the same, I think.
I don't actually think they're connected. I think the connection is there are things that are happening in the video game space, and I think that's it.
It's just
there's probably the same
the periodicity of idiots coming together and going online, right? We see it all the time. Not necessarily just in the gaming space, but everywhere. I think... Yeah, go on.
I was going to say, why do you think gamers appear to be so susceptible to this?
I don't think they are. No more than anybody else. I think the reason we see it more is because we're in the same spheres of influence. And gamers, if nothing else, are technologically probably more adept than a lot of other people. So they're on a lot more platforms.
That's probably
right?
true.
It's going to be harder for us to sort of have a... You know, to be privy to some sort of bigot meeting from people who don't use technology, or people who
true, we'd
a
have
bit
to
off
like
the grid, right? You know, this
go to those.
This is literally our wheelhouse. So I think we see it more often.
That's fair enough.
That's my take on it. Regardless, I mean, I'm happy for people to argue about things. In fact, I think argument is good. It's healthy. It's human. But don't be a bigot. Don't send people death threats or threats of any kind. keep things civil, right? If you can't make a civilized argument, you know, like Sean was saying, if you can't be constructive and say it clearly and plainly, well, then just fuck off.
I think our next episode might be civility and argument.
Maybe it's a good place to start, right? We can define our own boundaries as well.
I'm going to find myself in disagreement with Stephen Fry, which is a very unpleasant place to end up. It doesn't happen very often, but he said something about civility and argument that I fundamentally disagree with. And on that sizzle.
Yeah, that's great sizzle, because even I don't know what that is. I don't think. I probably do, but yeah, we'll be there. Game and Game 1.0, we can discuss that offline. Well, online, but off air.
Off air. Off air.
In our Discord, again. People, just come to our Discord, right? It's a great place to chat. We have lots of debates. Sometimes it really spirals out of control. I'm at work and busy. I don't know why that is. Maybe I'm just a negative influence on that whole place, but...
We've had some screaming debates in there. It was good.
Yes.
And everyone stayed mostly civil.
Everyone stays mostly civil. This is the classic thing, right? We're creating a bit of an echo chamber, I suspect. I mean, how else can we? Because people who listen to us and like what we say come to the Discord, so odds are we're sort of like-minded, or at least like-spirited.
I like the idea that we're creating an echo chamber of agreeable disagreement.
We are creating an echo chamber of agreeable disagreement. I mean, it's the only reason I talk to you. That's more like disagreeable disagreement, isn't it?
it
no, that very much is Gamergate 2.0. That's disagreeable disagreement.
That's just being a douchebag. Yeah. Anyway.
I think, you know, have we done it? We've kept it short-ish.
I've been trying to end this episode for 3 minutes.
Bullshit! I've been trying to end it for 15, and you railed us back to Gamergate 1.0. This is entirely on you. But no.
Jesus Christ.
Let's end it. It's been a good one. We'll continue it. But yeah, thanks for listening to this episode of Expertise is Overrated. No doubt we've said some things that were either objectively wrong or downright offensive. More topical than usual, this sentence. As ever, feel free to let us know, rate the podcast wherever you can, check out our Patreon for bonus content, and come chat to us on our Discord.
If you're lucky, we might just argue with you in one of our upcoming episodes. And if you're really lucky, we might call you an idiot. Come back next time for some more absolute nonsense.